Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End outside Vicarage Road after, well, a 2-1 defeat at home to Leicester. My name's John, with me is Jason.
Good evening.
Michael.
Watcher.
And DCW.
Hello.
So what are we thinking? You're leaving vibes, I think the kids call it these days, and I keep using it and I half think that makes me sound even older than I am. Jason, leaving that game after last week, which was teetering on the, you know, use of the word embarrassing against Cardiff. What about today? How are you feeling leaving today?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because you sort of feel, well, they're top of the league, they're good. We saw their second goal, how good they can be. And we did have them worried. We had them rolling around and time-wasting and niggly fouls and pulling the shirts. So they were concerned about us. And you think, we gave away a soft penalty, and you just... It's almost like a sense of, okay, it was a good effort, but what might have been, you know, you still, you get no points for being plucky second in football. And it's like, it's that sort of tinge of, okay, we did okay, we're still enjoying watching Watford, but, oh, if only.
Yeah, and it's quite nice, Michael, leaving, saying what could have been, rather than, oh, that's what we got.
Yeah, I think it's quite telling that at the final whistle, the ground was still full. And I think that there wasn't many people leaving, because it did feel like Watford had built up a little bit of head of steam. Their triple sub from Val on round about the hour mark changed the momentum, and Watford did get back into it and did make it difficult for Leicester, and they'll be very, very relieved to be heading home with the win. Watford didn't create much. We'll go on to talk about that in greater detail. But Jason is right. It showed us what we have enjoyed about this Watford team. But also it put once again into absolute stark focus what the massive issue is with this football team. And that is that they simply cannot score goals.
DCW, let's talk about the beginning of the game. Early sub, unfortunately, for Bio going off with his... looked like he pulled up with a hammy. Didn't really feel like that had an impact, but it did mean that we started with Rajovic up front.
That is an impact, John. That is a huge impact, having to change. Bio is limited, but Rajovic is even more limited. Sorry, Dave.
But Dave, how would you feel about the first half? Generally, were we being limited? Were we just not being effective?
Val's obviously decided to start Bio up front, and it does seem, you know, he kind of chops and changes between the two of them, doesn't he, on a game-by-game basis. But he's thought that Bio would be the better option today, and he goes off after 2 minutes. So that does put you on the back foot a little bit. For a team like Leicester, who are going to try and have more of the ball, very notable for the way they try and pass it out from the back, you need an energetic press, and Rajovic doesn't give you that. So it was a bit of a thankless task for him being chucked into the fray in that way so early on in a game that probably wasn't best suited to him. Ultimately, he ended up being, you know, the substitute ended up being subbed. And fair enough. So it was a shame, but we were just talking about him before we started the pod, really, and it's like, it kind of not his fault, really. We spoke about it with Matt, didn't we, on Thursday, about his limitations and stuff. We know what his limitations are, and he still, if you put the ball in the box, he might get his head on it, but in a game like that, we weren't really going to be able to fashion too many situations where we were able to do that. And unfortunately for him, it was very obvious how much we improved when he went off.
It is an issue for the psyche of this Watford side, knowing that there isn't someone in the middle that is going to score goals or is going to threaten. But Bio and Rajovic, everyone has spoken about it ad nauseam. We all know if you could mix half of one with half of the other and might meld them together, you might have a decent championship striker there. But they're both what they are, and they're both not good enough. One of them, as Dave said, we were set up to play with him. He's disappeared after 70 seconds. So that's like, right, OK, we already know it's difficult in that final third. Now our game plan that we've worked on all week is out the window. And you can tell the way the guys play in the final third, they are having to overplay because they're having to carve a chance of such perfection before they're willing to have a chance, because they know there is nothing there. The option is always to go back or to hang on to it. And we've got... Let's take Matthias Martins, for example, in that first half. He was another one that came off. Didn't really make an impact. And I was talking to Dave Levy at half-time about him. He never seems to beat a man. I can't remember the last time I've seen him beat a man. He's okay at holding on to possession.
The question actually, I was thinking, is he one-footed? Is he that one-footed? Because whenever he seems to get it on his left, he doesn't seem to do anything with it. Yeah, it feels like he always wants to go onto his right. And we've always talked about him when he plays on the left. He always wants to cut in and have that shot.
Yeah.
It just feels like, actually, is he... is his left foot not good enough?
Potentially, and that's potentially an issue. We certainly haven't seen anything from Martins to get the blood pumping, really. But I think Dave is right to defend Rajovic in terms of he's playing to the limit of his ability. Well, Martins, what's he supposed to do if he does beat a man? And I think that you can see that in the way they play. It's like, well, we'll get there, then what? And I spoke to one of the BBC Leicester guys at half-time, and he said, you know, Watford are all right, they're fine. But as soon as you get to the final third, you disintegrate. Everything just evaporates into nothingness. And it's been the case for a long, long time now. And that we can see it, and they play like it, I think. And it makes life very, very difficult. And I think in the context of the whole game, knowing that, knowing what we're up against, they actually did okay. And they did look, you know, I'm not going to say committed, that's nonsense, but they did look okay. They did make it hard for Leicester. They didn't have it easy. The first goal was a penalty, which I just think that penalties like that are desperately, desperately soft. I think I can see why they're given. But
I don't know about you, but I felt like I could see it coming. I saw Georgie heading into the box and thought, he's not a defensive player, is he? And it just looked like this could end badly. If he goes in and makes a challenge, he could be in trouble. And I wasn't surprised when he went down and the penalty was given. Right, he probably was soft, but probably could have handled it better in terms from what Georgie did.
I prefer a penalty to be a foul. I'd prefer it to be a foul, not for the opposition to stop and go over a foot and to win it. I mean, we'll take it if we get it, obviously. Yeah. And that was a bit of a gift, really. Either way, whether it was a soft penalty or not, it was a penalty. It's going to get given 99 times out of 100, and it was. It was duly dispatched. But that put us on the back foot. Then we go 2-0 down. They break the press, really. They've just done well there. It's a good goal. They've showed what they can do, and they've unlocked us and done it. And you think, right, this could be the long afternoon that we were sort of preparing ourselves for. But they did turn it round. Val made those subs, and the crowd got going again. The team got going. They carved out a couple of opportunities. Ince on the edge of the box tried to curl one in. It showed his rustiness, hasn't played any football, and that's what you'd expect. It was an absolute sight. There's nothing more than that from him. There was the shot from, I think, was it Aspria, clipped the heels, and went agonisingly wide. I mean,
I think the keeper saved it as well. Keeper got a touch on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we had 8 or 9 corners. They had one. So as Matt Furniss on a brilliant new podcast we've been doing with Dave and John, well done to you, Lance, by the way, on that. We'll tell you, stats can be and data can be used to show anything, but we weren't out of the game, which is something. But we've got, you can't hide from the fact we have a massive, massive long-term problem.
Dave, let's talk about substitutions. What was it that you think it morphed a little bit? And in some ways, Yasa coming on for Ken, sort of understandable because he's come back from injury. But I must say, there was one very long run from Ken in the first half where he came out of defence, he went down the left hand side, he cut through, another tackle there, no it wasn't, he kept going, he passed the ball, and it was like, Ken, we love a hard worker, well done. But what do you think it was about that, those changes, even with Andrews being on the right hand side of midfield, Tom Delibashiri was still sort of staying back. What was it you think that flipped it? Do you think it was just the pieces that were changed, or do you think actually the mentality was changed enough?
We swapped some 6 or 7 out of 10 players for 7 or 8 out of 10 players. Dennis and Aspria are better than Martins and Ken when they're playing at their best. And I think you saw that. I think the mobility and the agility that Aspria and Dennis, who looked a bit sharper today, and obviously he got given his goal on an absolute plate, but still showed a few nice touches. He sort of, that chance that Ince ended up finishing, it kind of looked like Ince kind of took it off Dennis. I bet Dennis was sort of eyeing up a shot there. And he looked promising, and he reminded us that he's a good footballer. From all the other stuff we've talked about is, you know, kind of a separate issue. But he's a good footballer. He's a much better footballer than Bayo or Rajovic. And I'd much rather have him in the team if he's physically up to it. Great, get him in because he's better. And Aspria, I never understand when Aspria doesn't start. Maybe it's a fitness thing, maybe it's a squad management thing. Obviously we've got a small squad, played a lot of football and all that, but I think Aspria is our best player. I love seeing him on the pitch, and I think he makes things happen, and he causes opposition defences to have to think about him and to have to compensate for him. You know, Andrews didn't really get into the game much, really. He was kind of put out on that right sort of wing, which is slightly unfamiliar for him. But again, just sort of, you know, gave it his all and kind of did his best, but just didn't really get him. Didn't get too many opportunities to put crosses in or get in behind. Was it Andrews or was it Hoot who put a beautiful ball in?
Andrews
put that ball in for Dennis, which is probably the best thing he did do. And you know, Dennis has kind of tried to square it in the end. I wonder if he could have opened his body up with his left foot and tried to get it in to
fair,
the far post.
That pretty much that same position last week. He didn't pass it. He put it completely wide, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I was scathing of him because like, oh, that's the worst he could be. Think, oh, you've learnt a little bit, but he was off. I think he was actually slightly off balance when he made the final pass. There was an opportunity, I think, someone in the middle of the pitch. But you know, that's again part of it. But it was, I think, for me, Dennis's most effective performance. I'm not going to say best performance since he's come back, but he was more effective, I think, in you know, the half an hour or so he had.
Yeah, and the next step is for him to start a game. Get him up to speed fitness wise and get him on from the start, because once he gets a couple of goals and gets his confidence up, I think the issues that Mike talks about will perhaps start to slightly dissipate when we've got a player in the final third who we can very simply be confident in giving the ball to. I think that's the issue with Rajovic a lot of the time, is that he makes good runs in the penalty box, and when a good ball is put into the box, he'll give himself a good chance of getting on the end of it. When we've got the ball in midfield, whether it's by instruction from Valerian or whether it's their own sort of volition, they never pass it to him.
No.
And he makes runs and he's sort of waving his arms up and down, but they don't give the ball to him, because I can't help but feel that partly, again, might be tactical, but partly I just think that when you're a midfielder, you've got the ball at your feet and you look at him, you just think, what's the point? He's not going to hold on to it. He's not going to get it and beat someone. What's he going to do with it? So, but with Dennis, it's a completely different proposition. You give him that ball, yes, all right, he might lose it, but he also might nutmeg someone and go through. He's got the ability to do something, which would just give us something a bit more, help us kick the ball, help us get up the pitch and give us a bit more threat. And we have got a run of games coming up in the near future where opposition's a bit easier on paper. You know, hopefully we can kind of put this sort of slightly sticky run behind us and start getting a bit of momentum back.
Jason, though, we did some certain things that you noticed, particularly how we were sort of trying to tactically set up when it came to playing against Leicester and, you know, as a team, not just compared to other teams.
Yeah, I was wondering, because there was that sort of slight murmur of frustration when we weren't pressing the goalkeeper. And I started to wonder if it was, I'm sort of recalling back to Hoot's goal against Hull, and he mentioned the fact that it was a tactic they'd deployed against Leicester, or wanted to deploy against Leicester the week before when we lost up at the KP. And then in the second half, again, we sort of stood off him a bit, and he's come out beyond the edge of his area, and then he's fluffed his pass and Porto's straight on it. Poor first touch, and he's lost the ball. And that's what they made me, is this deliberate? Are they letting him come out, trying to look to see if he'll make a mistake, and then getting the ball? And then, of course, not long after that, Hoot actually did try a shot, didn't he, from beyond. So that just got me wondering if we were trying that sort of same tactic again.
Yeah. But the thing is, those tactic-wise, Michael, we talk about, you know, how we start the game, and you know, it comes down to Val, what instructions he gives them. But we often have continually this season talked about those 60-minute, you know, substitutions. But today really felt like he made the right substitutions. They weren't, which have been in the last couple of weeks, felt like, let's just keep throwing it on and throwing on and throwing it on. They were thoughtful.
Yeah, they ultimately you get judged by the impact, and those substitutions, as Dave said, we brought better players on. If in effect, I'll always stick up for King Ken. You don't need me to tell you or anyone listening what we get from him. But you judge the substitutions on the impact they had in the game. And as I said, everyone was still in the ground at the end. We were still hopeful of nicking something against the runaway league leaders. And that was almost entirely down to those substitutions. I do think there was probably very little else he could have done, quite frankly. You either let the thing go and you just cut it loose completely and call it a busted flush and just try and do damage limitation. But in fairness to him, those substitutions did turn the game around. They changed the momentum entirely, and Leicester were worried. They absolutely were worried. The time wasting, the fouling, which they're doing throughout, really. I mean, everyone's saying they're a Premier League team in waiting. They certainly act like a Premier League team. Expect every foul to be given for them and nothing to be given against them. Absolute nonsense. I thought the ref and officials had a poor game in terms of managing that side of things. But judged by the impact of the subs, and they were impactful, And that was the, by far and away, after those subs, that was Watford's best period of the game. The final, whatever it was, half an hour, 25 minutes. I think he had to do something. It was either that or you take a 3-0. You're aiming for a 3-0 defeat. Glad he went for that. And the number of games we've gone without a win is creeping up. The recent run, as Dave said, he called it a little bit sticky. We've beaten QPR and Chesterfield. Only just beaten Chesterfield. Laboured a bit against QPR. Lots of draws and defeats in there as well. But what they can get from that is a bit of confidence, I think. Certainly from that final that final sort of salvo, if you like, that final period, third of the game. And as Dave's already said, we're coming up playing teams that are in a more favourable part of the table. And the job we've got is to get Emmanuel Dennis fit and to get that final third believing. Dave's absolutely right. They don't play passes because they think, what is the point? And that is an awful way to be. And I've spoken before about it takes us three passes to do what we should be doing with one. And the reason they do that is because, again, what is the point? We'll just get nowhere quicker. So the job of work now is to get Dennis up to speed, and it will be really, really interesting as to whether he is played down the middle. Because he's gone on record, and we know that any football manager that says anything in any context now is going to be pounced on by supporters. So the supporters expecting to see Dennis deployed solely as a winger. We haven't got the luxury, I don't think. And for me, he play him down the middle.
Just an update. The mannequin that was outside the Hornet shop we mentioned last week, the injury is unfortunately still there. The leg fell off last week, and the physio this week clearly hasn't, because he is still a one-legged mannequin in the Hornet shop.
The Hornet shop's had a terrible transfer window as well.
Patsy won't come back on until we win again.
Well, a bit of a downer there to finish the podcast. Can I think of an upper?
Is that a new podcast that we came out this week?
Yeah, if you haven't listened to that yet, a new thing we've been trying out. It was Dave and I, along with Matt Furness, Watford fan, an Opta guru of stats. Something we want to try that's a bit different from the Rookery End, or more than what we normally do. We're trying to be reflective. We try not to rant and rave too much. And it was really nice, if you haven't listened to it yet, do have a listen. Really nice sort of break things down into... Yeah, it's nice, Dave, to sort of get a different perspective on the emotions that we have as fans, but to sort of put them in a context that either backed it up or, well, a bit surprising, I suppose.
Yeah, it was good. Matt's really good. Matt's like one of the absolute best in the business in terms of working with data and interpreting data and, you know, making it accessible for all, because it can be a bit confusing sometimes, or sometimes a bit lacking context. So I would encourage anyone to have a listen, and we're going to be doing plenty more between now and the end of the season.
There's also a new episode of Hornet Heaven out now. If you've never listened to Hornet Heaven, don't go and listen to this episode. It's quite meta, and if you've got no idea what Hornet Heaven's about, it'll be quite confusing. But do go and listen to a bit of Hornet Heaven, and then maybe come back to it when you listen to about five or six episodes. Norwich away in the week. They're sort of in a very similar place to us. Rotherham.
Hey, you know what's going to happen at Norwich?
Oh!
We're going to have Dennis is going to go there again, score. We're going to get another opportunity for the back flick to come out.
Hopefully that guy who went mental still got his season ticket in exactly the same place. Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, the games are coming thick and fast, and there's been a lot of spoken about fatigue. We haven't even mentioned the Southampton result. I'm sure everyone sort of consigned that to the annals of history before it even full-time whistle went. And the games are coming thick and fast, but that is the nature of the Championship. And I think for this side, you have to view it. You know, we've been down about the striking options, we've been down about the finances and the long-term future, but you've got to view it as an opportunity for this side to capitalise on that little kernel of hope that we managed to carve out of this game this afternoon. They ended not on a high, but with hope. And I think that's... Norwich away on Tuesday is not the game you want. It's a long old way, it's a difficult journey, tougher for supporters. I know it's half term in some areas, but that's a big ask to get up to Norwich on a Tuesday night after this run of games. But it's an opportunity for them to try and somehow unlock. There is potential there, there is ability, and there is willingness that you're not seeing this side give up. So hopefully they see it as an opportunity, another opportunity for Emmanuel Dennis. And look, there's no way that we're going to get away from however that pans out. He's going to be pivotable If he is pivotable, that'd be good. Yeah. But he's going to be pivotal for Watford one way or another. All the eggs are in that number 25 shirt-shaped basket, aren't they? And getting him fit and ready to go, but maybe get a half into him on Tuesday, start with him down the middle against Rotherham, a team struggling. He should be too good for some of these teams. And plenty still to come. Got to view it as an opportunity.
We want the backflip. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you. Before we go, there's a couple of good things that have made me smile at the start of the game today. Number one, when Tim was doing the team announcements, he said that Ken Semmer played his 150th game this week.
Yeah.
And I've now got an image of my head of Ken Semmer playing 150 games of football in a week. And he probably would if you asked him to, because he's that sort of guy.
Maybe it was FIFA.
And the second one, it's the Super Bowl this weekend. And I loved our little hat tip to the NFL when Georgie Chakvetadze was the man in motion for our kickoff. Ran from the touchline to the sort of centre circle and then up the field. It was a great move.
Yeah.
Then you got a goal, didn't we?
Thank you, Michael.
Touchdown, Watford.
Thank you, DCW.
Thank you.
We'll be back soon with more podcasts. Come on, you horns!